Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. Matteo Ricci was a Jesuit, a humanist, a scientist, and a missionary. He wrote in his letters, "In all things I adapted myself to them," which means the Chinese. So in other words, a completely different culture. Would you say that it is his openness and respect for the Chinese culture that marks the success of his missionary zeal in China?
Quite clearly, this is one of his two legs on which he walked and one of his two hands with which he worked. It was a deep love and respect, and a deep love and respect shown also to the Chinese by the beautiful language he used, by the quotations he made. Yeah? So the Chinese felt, here's somebody who is really understanding us and who is feeling that we have a treasure to offer to the whole world. But the other leg on which he walked was his deep love and conviction that the presence of Christ transforms everything and can also transform Chinese culture. So this double message, this double conviction, I respect you and I rediscover Christ through the respect I have for the foreigner, for the strange culture, was what made him work and what made his work succeed.
It was very unusual at that time, he died in 1610. It wasn't so logical that one was so open to other cultures. He was a European, Matteo Ricci.
Yes.
Was born in Macerata and very Italian then. Mm. How did he manage to balance these things? Because usually when missionaries went out, they tried to preach, whereas that wasn't his approach at all. He was very subtle, wasn't he?
You know, he was a Jesuit. And a Jesuit starts from the idea that every human person has already something to offer, has already a ground into which you can sow the seed of Christ. And this ground is necessary, is important for the whole church, is important for all of humanity. So treasuring what is already there, in classical language, respecting the nature before you speak about the supernatural, is something he brought along as a Jesuit. And therefore, he came into China and did not use this respect as a trick, but he was profoundly interested in discovering what China would have to offer to the whole human family. And he felt, onto that ground, onto that rich ground, I can sow the seed of the gospel.
The Jesuits in general, they were highly educated. I mean, we're talking of someone who was respected by the Chinese specifically because he was a scientist, apart from anything else. I mean, they respected that side to him.
Yes.
He fed into that, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, he had his formation from what is today the Gregorian University, and he had his formation not only in theology. He brought along mathematics and sciences in a more general
like
sense,
astronomy.
What we are. Exactly. So
even music.
He was even a musician and a theorist on music. He could compose. The Chinese were really interested in learning from him to recalculate, for example, the calendar. Why was that important? If the emperor could predict that we will have a lunar phenomenon in the next 15 years. And then it really came about. The emperor showed that he was really in control of the cosmos. So it was interesting, it was even important for the emperor to have highest standard astronomy. Mathematics played a great role in that, and therefore the Chinese said, here is somebody who is not coming just as some street-walking monk who is bringing us a nice-sounding spirituality impulse, but somebody who can help us rethink life.
And someone who, paradoxically, is there to evangelize, in a sense, but he was also somebody who was shaped by the Chinese, no? It worked at two levels, didn't it?
Yeah, that's very interesting about him. Because he loved Chinese culture and tradition so much, he, in his literary production, always showed also how their own sources would come into his own philosophy. Even when he and his fellow Jesuits started designing the liturgy that should be celebrated in China. They brought in elements of Chinese tradition, to the point that after his death, the Catholic Church in Rome said, well, you have gone too far. You were compromising so much, you were respecting their culture so much, that this should stop. Today, everybody recognizes this was an important thing and a good thing. Inculturation, bringing a strange culture into fruitful contact with the gospel, is something the whole church wants to do today. And the richness also of liturgical expressions is something that is part of the point of being Catholic today.
What is his legacy today at a theological level first?
The first thing is, it is not enough to be convinced of the meaning of Jesus Christ to be a credible witness of the Lord. You need to understand the culture you live in. You need to love it so much that it starts to speak to you. Only then you can speak to the people around you. And that makes sense not only when you go far away. This makes sense also when you speak to the people of your own country, of your own origin. This is the first point. The second thing is, you must know your own Christian theology so well that in contact with new questions, new ideas, new ways of expressing feelings, you can adapt the gospel, not compromise it, but make it speak in a new language. For that, you must be a very good theologian, otherwise you cannot do dialogue. You know, Benedict XVI said to the Jesuits when they met in Rome for their general congregations, you have to be where the frontiers of today are. And we were really very happy to hear that he trusts us in risking new things. He knows, as a theologian who is constantly discussing with modern thought, that it can be dangerous, a risky thing to be at the borders, but for the gospel, for the Lord, and for the sake of truth, it is necessary to go to these borders again. So Ritchie is for us the encouragement and the example of risking new borders.
Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.